Yeah, amen to that. That's a powerful message, isn't it? Really, because it's so easy to feel powerless in this time. And so for Purim to invite us, like, it's an invitation into agency rather than victimhood. It's about working together in community rather than kind of believing that we're by ourselves and isolated, because that's, I think, the most dangerous place to be in. Yeah, thank you. It's very powerful. This is why I love our conversations, you see.
Rambling on. Rambling on.
Yay, welcome back. I can't believe I'm here with both of you, and we're actually coming back to a new series of Rabbiting On. Nice to see you both.
Hello.
Hi. Sorry, we're not on YouTube, but I was dancing. I'm so happy to be back in this space.
No visuals. Everyone will just have to have that mental image of who we all are. And just in case they've forgotten to put voices to names, just going to let us all introduce ourselves and with our new biographical lines of introduction. So I'm Rabbi Miriam Berger from Wellspring.
I'll go next. It sounded really formal. I didn't know what to do. Hi, I'm Rabbi Robin Ashworth-Steen. I am currently doing a full-time PhD in feminist biblical studies, which is looking at the role of the female rabbi through prophecy. I'm also the co-chair of our rabbinic group, the Assembly of Reform Rabbis and Cantors, and doing some lovely visiting your communities as freelance rabbi as well. That wasn't very pithy, but there you go.
And I'm Rabbi Debbie Young Summers, and I'm part of the clergy team at Edrera and Hendon Reform Synagogue. I'm the only one still doing what I was doing the last time we were all doing this.
Yeah. It has been a change of time and world in all sorts of ways. So lovely to be back, the three of us. And I understand that this is series three, but Dan has decided this is actually series four because we had such a long series one that really that should have been two series. And he tells us that this is going to include our 40th episode of Rabbiting On part of this series. But he thinks that 40 is a big number, whereas I know that, you know, 40s are just the new 20s, and therefore it hasn't really been a lot of Rabbiting Ons at all.
40 seems like a lot. It doesn't seem possible.
That's like generation in the, like, the rabbinic biblical word. That's like generations. Like, a lot's gone down in 40 years, and maybe we'll reach the promised land. I don't know. This could be the series.
Every time I look in the mirror, I think that about the 40s as well.
You look great.
It's probably another episode for another time, but I genuinely felt so liberated when I hit 40. Like, 40 was a kind of, I just don't care anymore. You can think what you like.
Oh, I definitely think we need a reaching middle age rabbiting on.
Oh,
it's
let's
not middle aged anymore. Shush now.
I mean, what is it then?
Like, I'm not sure. Unless we are living to 120, I think that actually it is. Like, yeah. Please God, we should reach 90.
Oh, let's do it. I think we should have that as a future episode.
There we go. You heard it here first while we were creating. It feels, with all the levity and the joy and the loveliness of seeing your faces and hearing your voices and being back in this really comfortable space, it's hard not to look back at the episode we last recorded together, which was almost 2 years ago. And it just feels like Debbie said that, you know, our worlds in terms of our careers for two of us have changed in that time. But actually, the world around us and our context for being rabbis and leaders have changed so enormously in that time as well. We left the end of the last series all the way back in March 2023. And actually, that last conversation was a discussion on what was unfolding at the time internally in Israel, as millions of Israelis had taken to the streets protesting the judicial reforms being proposed by the ultra-right-wing coalition, and what that meant for Israel's democracy and society, and of course, its impact on peace in the region. And, you know, at that time, we were talking about how polarizing it was and how difficult it was to hold these kind of disparate views that were emerging within community and kind of holding communal space at that time. And now I kind of look back and think, if only that was the most difficult dayenu, it really would have been enough that was the struggle that we were having. Because, of course, kind of since October 2023, everything changed. Everything changed in Israel. Everything changed within our relationships to Israel and what was going on and what continues to go on. And so it just feels so important to be back and having this conversation, really, as a way of being able to continue to talk as Jews in the diaspora, as rabbis, as three women, but actually to be able to acknowledge all that it means to be having to exist in this painful and brutal new existence. So we've got a short run of episodes and some really important conversations that I hope will emerge from there. We'll be thinking about what it means to be Jewish now in 2025. We'll even be speaking directly to an Israeli and a Palestinian to hear firsthand the devastation experienced by them on and since October 7th, and really talking to each other about what it means to be dealing with all of that stuff right now. And I think this series is going to be particularly interesting. Although it's a short series, it's going to be a great and interesting lineup. We're not only going to be talking about Israel by any means. The assisted dying debate is definitely something that I think we're going to need to take on board, thinking more broadly about the impact of the way the internet butts in and up against our lives, looking at social media and AI. It's all coming up in this series. And really, I just want to be hearing your voices, Debbie and Robin.
Can't wait to get into it. And I feel like I wish we would have had our podcast for the last 2 years, because I think actually it would have been really helpful to kind of process all of the changes that have happened. I was thinking as you spoke, like not only globally, but also like in our little world of Reform and liberal Judaism, we're also becoming progressive Judaism, which has thrown up loads of questions about who are we? Who do we think we are? What are the stories we tell about ourselves? What's our voice? What's our impact on the world? What's our theology? All of that, which of course is bound up in the big question, which I think is what we hold as rabbiting on, of like, how do we respond to the world Jewishly in the way that it is? And I listened to the podcast because producer Dan gave us homework, which I think only I did, a star for Robin. SWAT. Thank you. Always happy to take that role. And I listened back to that episode and I was almost crying on the school run because it felt so naive is not the right word, but it just felt we had no idea what was coming. And we were saying how hard and how polarized. And I was like, really? Is that what we thought then? Like, for me, it's like post 7th of October, that's when it became polarized, like, and Trump, you know, all of that, like, that's been the problem. But actually, we were saying the same things about the issues. And I, at one point, say, I'm stuttering, I can't even talk about it because it's so hard. And I was like, oh, sweetheart, like, that was not even, it wasn't easy, but, you know, we had such clarity about what it was in that moment to be progressive mm-hmm. Jews in relationship and support of Israel. And it's different now within clergy, within communities. So yeah, I'm really glad we're back so we can just start to reflect and also kind of think forward or just be supportive together and with our listeners as well.
I've really noticed the difference of not writing a sermon each week and not having that kind of space in which to sort of order my thoughts and kind of present it back. So for me, being able to both, you know, talk and to listen to the two of you, I think will really be a good way of kind of coping with that lack of framework of kind of thinking about the big issues of the moment. But Debbie, it feels like one of the changes that's happened since we last were recording is that neither Robin or I are currently in community in a full-time way, and you are. And so I'd love to hear a bit of that, kind of taking the temperature of what does it feel like being in community at the moment?
I mean, I've been really looking forward to having this time together, partly because I do have to keep finding the words and writing those sermons, and knowing I have the opportunity to reflect and think with you guys is always such a meaningful way of processing our stuff. I remember when we got to the talking about the High Holy Days, or really getting to the High Holy Days last year, 24, I was sat in one of our clergy team meetings and I was suddenly realizing I'm not over the last High Holy Days yet. Right. How can we be here again? How can it be time mm-hmm. for the Hagim again when we're still actually in Simchat Torah 2023? I said at the time, you know, I think what we all really need is therapy as clergy. I think, you know, we've been holding so much for ourselves and for others. It has been overwhelming at times. It's been a huge privilege at times. Yeah, I think as a community, we've been really, really deeply impacted. First of all, because every Jew, one way or the other, feels the impact of what's happened, whether they are being impacted by anti-Semitism on the street or joining marches or... But as a community, we lost one of our own, one of our own members, one of the children of the community whose forms for Aliyah I had signed. He was on security at the Nova Festival. That loss for his family and for so many who loved him has just been life-changing. And for it to happen in such a brutal way. And then we also have a very involved elderly member who was born and raised in Israel and moved here in her 20s. And her childhood best friend was Oded Lifshitz, who sadly came home nearly 2 weeks ago in a coffin. So we've sort of spent 18 months praying with her for his return. And all of that has been, you know, very painful, but also a real reminder of what community's for in lots of ways. Being able to bring that pain and that sadness and that confusion together to hold it. But that's not to say that we're not, as sort of Robin was inferring earlier, divided as a community. You know, there's a lot of political differences being held in the same space, which is inevitable of a community of more than 3,000 Jews. You know, we say two Jews, three opinions. And there is a huge variety. And I think around this debate in particular, people feel very strongly and have found it increasingly difficult to hear each other, to hear those voices that don't identically align with their own. And I suppose for me personally, speaking really as me, not as Rabbi Debbie particularly, I'm always a person that has tried to hold nuance and to hear multiple voices and to value all those voices as important. And that's become increasingly painful for those around me, I suppose. So it's been a lot. I'm trying to find the words on a Shabbat morning where you can speak with depth and meaning, but also not alienate people who are coming from a different perspective potentially, has been a challenge at times. You know, we want to be authentic, we want to be real, but we also want to take people with us. And trying to find those words to do that can be very hard work. I think for one of the most inspiring moments for me, I suppose, has been the repeated reminder from my colleague, Rabbi Mark Goldsmith, whenever we're trying to articulate something or respond to something, is to say, right, what are the values that we are starting from? Who are we and what do we believe before we start responding to X request or Y demand? Or, you know, is this in alignment with our values as a movement, as a community?
It's interesting to hear that piece particularly, because I think, you know, one of the challenges of this huge time is that it hasn't really been that long after COVID, where we were also as community leaders kind of really thinking about what do we need to respond to? What's our role in this situation? What do people need from us and how do they need to be held at this time? And actually, you know, in a way, it feels very, very different and a very different kind of threat. And yet that level of pain, the level of the difference of how each individual is experiencing what they're experiencing, and the role of where is the synagogue or where is community or who is the rabbi at this point is so much part of that question. The what values are there here? Are we the same as kind of U3A just going online? Or is there something different about how we as a synagogue respond to COVID in the same way as there are, you know, a difference between whether we're educating or healing or galvanizing support.
Yeah. And I suppose like COVID, we've tried to create multiple spaces for different people to access what they need in the ways that they need. But it's hard to cover all your bases. So yeah, I think the world is very, very different to where it was 2 years ago. But your worlds are also completely different and you've moved into really different spaces. In a way, you know, I wanted to go back into community life, leaving my previous role. And this was what I wanted to get back into. I wanted to walk people's journeys with them and hold them through life's ups and downs. And boy, have I had a chance to do that. But, you know, Robin, you have made a huge change in your career. And just listening to your introduction, there's so much that you're doing now. Can you just expand on some of that and tell us how it's going and what you've been enjoying?
Yeah, I'm happy to. Well, I'm really also excited to hear about Miriam, because one of my comments in the conversation you just had then about this time is the role of trauma. And I went on the Yachad clergy trip last week to Israel and Palestine. And I think really clearly there we got a message that we're talking about traumatized people and how addressing that trauma and then being able to hear each other and talk. And I was really kind of impacted by that. And so, you know, you're going to speak hopefully about Wellspring shortly, but that role of ritual, that role that we need to hold in community and outside of it, of how do we support people when we're in such deep pain and trauma, and with COVID on top of that as well. And stepping away from the community rabbiner, not only am I sleeping ever so slightly better, but it's also given me a really keen angle or a reflection on what it is that is so beautiful about what we do. And, you know, like I don't know whether Miriam, you have the same thing, but there's like moments I feel really real yearning to be in community, as a rabbi, like to have the privilege of leading and making connections between people, of helping. I kept saying this in the last series, you know, the yes, like, yes, that is Jewish. Yes, do your Judaism like that. Yes, step in. Oh, and there's a person here or an organizer, like that kind of role. And there's parts of it that I just deeply miss. And that's been really helpful to step back and go, okay. And to also think that like there's, you know, structural issues around quite how exhausting all of that work is. But yeah, so I'm taking like a 3-year kind of, it's not really sabbatical because it's all impacting on the world we're in, but doing my PhD, it feels like a real luxury. I'm studying, interviewing at the moment, all the female rabbis in Britain, the progressive ones, to talk about their, how they
I haven't scheduled my interview now.
I know.
The guilt.
No pressure.
This is it finished. That's my next job.
Yeah, I'm like organising everyone to like sign up for interview links. Thanks, Miriam. Yeah, so I'm interviewing everyone to talk about like that. Well, how do they understand the role of what a rabbi is? How does gender impact? And like, could reimagining prophecy be an answer to our times and also a way to kind of create new structures and new roles and ways of being to uplift the bits of the job that really are, and we can bring so much to. So I'm really enjoying that. And being co-chair of the Assembly of Reform Rabbis and Cantors has been really interesting because we're on this process of bringing the two movements together into a new movement. And, you know, that process of change is fascinating to be part of. So yeah, I'm going to visit different communities around the country. I was in Edinburgh Liberal three weekends ago for Tu Bishvat Seder and Shabbat morning. And they're such a lovely community. So shout out to Edinburgh. But to see Judaism doing its thing in different ways in different communities, it's great. So I feel very like lucky at the moment. Yeah, so I'm having a great time. It's really good. And I'm doing lots of teaching. Teaching is great. I've been excited to get to know the students at Liebeck College and things like that. So yeah, lots of richness in it. But Miriam, update us, what's going on?
So I am loving my new role, and part of that is because I haven't had to grieve what I've given up, and that is because the clergy team at FRS are really lovely and welcoming and allow me to be their congregant now. And so I kind of still feel very much part of community and see everybody. I haven't had to kind of be suddenly kind of, that hasn't had to come out of my life, but the community are just incredibly respectful and, you know, see me in shul and know I'm there to be a congregant and are not making demands. They're just, you know, chatting, which is absolutely lovely. But I think the biggest kind of piece around Wellspring is having one focused project, right? I have a very obvious goal, which is very tangible, which is the creation of a physical space to create a mikveh set within a space that can hold people and help them to get to a point of being able to think about how, you know, life may or may not be as they intended it to be, wanted it to be, wished it could be, still hope it could be. And what it means to be able to use ritual to kind of mark time and acknowledge where we're up to and find that kind of sense of healing and acceptance with how life is. And I think the challenge is it's kind of disruptive in British jury in a way that a lot of the conversations leading up to it are really playing out, which is also part of the interesting piece. You know, we haven't had new organizations on the scene for a very long time. We've got into a comfortable rut where our charities that are cross-denominational tend to avoid doing Jewish. They do things for Jews. So their services are for the Jewish community, not really incorporating much Judaism or Jewish ritual or Jewish practice because that's so complicated. Now, the wonderful thing about mikvah is you do it on your own, right? So nobody needs to know what you're doing, what you're saying, the liturgy you're using, any of that stuff. And yet there's this kind of disruptive niggle that I sense that people are getting from, you know, conversations with me, which is like, why are you doing this? Why are you making this complicated? Nobody even uses mikvah anymore. Like, why do you feel the need to do kind of mental health stuff, well-being with ritual? And really, it's because I think Judaism is such an incredible time and space holder. It's what all of those rituals that we just take for granted that we get on and do because we're kind of obligated to do them, or they're just routine, or this is what we do. But actually, when we do them consciously and we realize what a benefit they have to our lives, we understand them and use them in a different way. And so, you know, this whole thing of kind of untainting the mikveh, taking and unraveling the generations of where that has been for people and what it means to people, whilst also unraveling some of British Jewish politics, I know makes the journey towards creating this a bit harder and a kind of steeper mountain to climb. But the image I have of the view from the top is really, really worth the climb for. And I know this is so much Debbie's kind of passion. She has got this. She's understood this about mikveh a lot longer than I have. I'm definitely the one that's late to the party. So I definitely feel I'm also just creating a ritual, a resource for other people, right? I'm not creating this as an institution for me to say, this is how I want it used, but rather to say to colleagues, I'm creating you the space. Now come in and do your thing, because actually that's what people need. The charities that are doing so much in such an amazing way for so many different causes to say, now let's add some Jewish ritual for the people you're supporting, and for our clergy to be able to say, let's have the space that we need in that moment. So I'm really excited. I haven't lost even an iota of the passion, even though I realize that, you know, I never went into the rabbinate to be a professional fundraiser. And I know that ultimately this mountain will only be climbed once I've managed to find the funding to make it happen. So wish me luck and buy a lottery ticket for me. That's my, you know, but that would make life easier.
It's wishing you luck, Miriam, but it's also what you are doing is so important for the whole community. Mm. And thank you for mentioning that I've loved this for years. You don't have to keep doing that. It's fine.
I mean, it's true.
Doing far more to make this real. And that's so important, because I couldn't do what you're doing. I don't have that kind of brain. I've just been talking about it with people for so long. And I think one of the really beautiful things that we're kind of being able to do now, because these conversations are becoming so much more common, is to show people that this is an amazing tool in the toolbox that Judaism has. It doesn't mean everyone has to pick that tool up, but so many people don't even know it's in their toolbox. And just to tie it into our previous conversation, the first time I went to the mikveh after October the 7th, I remember getting in the mikveh and being completely taken aback by the washing over myself of emotion. And I just sort of burst into tears in there. Because quite often I'll use the mikveh when I'm going as a space for personal prayers and asking for things for others. And the mikveh lady who was there said, it's all right, you're not the first. And right. Actually, so many of us were taking this agony into the mikveh, into this pool of tears, to allow us to kind of add to it and be part of it and be held by it.
I was talking to someone who has been involved in the hostage the moments where the hostages are arriving back in Israel. And the point that I was having the conversation with them, they said every single hostage who had arrived at the first sort of hospital that they then get to be reunited with their family, have all asked that before they got reunited, they were to be allowed to have a shower or a bath, that they needed to wash before they kind of embraced their family. And for me, there's something about, you know, even in a completely secular moment, that space and time of alone and water and, you know, how many of them were crying in the shower, one asks oneself, you know, how much more so when you've got the sort of generations of tears filling that mikveh with you and acknowledging that this isn't just any water, this isn't a bath or a shower, this is a transformatory moment with a difference. But I was fascinated by people's need in that instance for some kind of, I need to make a separation very physically away from that. I'm also really struck, and I feel like it's one of those things that as someone who was born Jewish, I'm not sure I have noticed how offensive I now have come to realize it is to have so many very lovely communal buildings within the kind of, you know, certainly within the progressive world, and have invested a lot of money in lots of our synagogue buildings, and to know the kind of those people who convert to Judaism and put so much work into the conversion process, and the Beit Din is such an important day for them. Actually, the current mikveh not being an appropriate space to see that their journey is valued by the kind of institutional Jewish kind of life.
I think one of the transformative powers of what you're doing and kind of the reclamation and uplift of mikveh is also that I had a really traumatic mikveh experience many years ago. And there's an argument around how mikveh can be used with women's bodies in certain spaces, and to be able to use the mikveh in a way that is redemptive, safe, is healing, is safe, is huge. And I can only imagine how that would feel for me to go into a mikveh in a different kind of space. And also I was thinking, and you have to forgive me because I'll probably keep on going about this for like a couple of episodes at least, but because I just went on this trip to Israel and the West Bank. They were talking about water rights in the West Bank as well, and how kind of water, and we know this in conflict just generally, that water is a tool in, you know, in whatever it is, in whatever agendas people play into. We went to Palestinian villages that weren't getting access to water. And it just made me think about, you know, like the healing power of water, but also just the basic essentials of what it is to have water. Like you said, with the hostages, there's this kind of the symbolism, that's a poor thing to say, but you know, what that meant in that moment and what that symbolized and the need you said, like the urgency in that moment and that basic right that's there. So I think there's something about this well of water, yeah, that is just the kind of most basic, crucial human need. And to be able to hold a ritual and a bracha, a blessing around it, a container, is just so vital. You should probably outline exactly what a mikveh is as well, because producer Dan has put a note in to say, could someone outline what it is in case it's new to people?
I was about to interject to say, and I'm sure we can move this bit earlier, but...
Great, go for it.
Go on, Debbie, you wrote your thesis on it.
So, well, it was involved a lot. It wasn't technically on mikveh, but mikveh is a ritual bath that we immerse ourselves in and have immersed ourselves in for thousands of years. Its origins are in Torah. And historically, it's been a moment of transition from illness to health, or from non-Jew to Jew, or from
unmarried,
not having a baby to having a baby. It's, you know, lots of moments of change and transition are honored through this immersion. I mean, there are lots of metaphors for it. It's like the womb of the Jewish people. It's like a pool of tears. It's something that can add a layer to who you are. And it's also something that can wash a layer off if that's what you want to do, to leave it behind. And it's a very private, beautiful immersion ritual.
As the Israelites did through the parted seas, that we can have our own, however often we choose to use mikveh, moment of being able to kind of go from one state to another, whatever we need that transformation, that change to be.
And shout out to Miriam, who's a female, not, oh, different Miriam.
Me.
Oh. Not you, the female prophet. You are kind of, well, anyway, but the other female prophet, Miriam, who's associated with water. I just thought it was a nice link with prophecy and us and the mikveh and, you know, that.
Wells of tears, all sorts. Wells,
yeah, great.
I feel like we need to acknowledge another biggie that's going on, like today, for those who have been quick off the mark and are listening on the day that this conversation goes live, because it's going live on Purim. And it feels like we could get totally into our kind of well of tears, this series of all that it is that we want transforming from and to, and all that whole kind of painful thing. And yet Purim is so kind of connected to the levity and the joy and the silliness and the topsy-turviness of everything. Debbie, again, like, you're the one that's in community. How is this Purim different from all other Purims? I think that's meant to be for a different festival, but you know what I mean.
I think we have done this several times now, right? We're now a year and a half in, and we've had Simchat Torah, we've had Purim, we've had Hanukkah, and we each time try to find meaningful ways to honor what's going on, whilst also remembering that for us to thrive, we have to also have the meaning and the joy that our festivals bring us. And Edgeware had a bar mitzvah the first Shabbat after October 7th. And this was a kid who was sort of asking himself constantly the week before, how can I celebrate something on a week like this? How can I, you know, have any party? And I said repeatedly through the service, we're so glad to have something to celebrate, because this is what our Judaism is about. We do keep living beyond, and we do have to keep finding meaning in what our Judaism is, not just those who want to cut our Judaism off and not allow that victory to happen. How did we carry on living through something so terrifying, through something so dark?
Yeah, for me, like, I think, strangely, Purim isn't a problem for me at this time, because I think that the story of the Book of Esther is so helpful to us. I mean, it's really challenging, but it's helpful. Shout out to my mum also, who has in these 2 years has completed her PhD on the Book of Esther. So that's exciting. But that's the story of Esther is all about, how do we navigate times that are oppressive and terrifying, and when there are people out to get us? And that the end chapter of the Book of Esther. And I used to be very much in the liberal, you know, tradition of like, I'd rather just not do Purim, because the end of the Book of Esther is really problematic, because then Esther takes revenge, basically. And as these decrees of thousands of people who are killed in the name, well, of her agenda, which isn't necessary. It's not really self-defense, although some commentators say that's what it is. So I was kind of like happy to ignore it. But actually, I think we ignore it at our peril. And it's really important to be able to face up to the really natural feeling, and I heard this last week particularly, the really natural feeling. We spoke to a kibbutz, Nick, in Nirim, which is the kibbutz in the Gaza envelope, and they'd been attacked by Hamas terrorists. They told us the stories of hiding the people who were killed in their kibbutz and the kibbutz next to them. Absolutely terrifying. And they're also not back in their homes yet. They're still displaced. And he said, the rabbi of this kibbutz, who works for Rabbis for Human Rights, said, it's very natural in these moments to want to turn inwards, like, and to close the door. And he didn't add this, but, like, you know, to hate, to feel terrified, because there's a lot of fear. And he said, like, we more than anyone know the darkness of Hamas and what's out to get us, like Haman, you know, like who's really there. And he said, but we're going to do the opposite. We're going to open up. And it was incredibly powerful. And the next day we went to Baruch Goldstein's grave. Baruch Goldstein was the guy in 1994 who said he was inspired by the story of Esther and Purim. And he went in and killed many Palestinian Muslim worshippers. It was a site of, you know, real massacre, completely abhorrent. And his grave, I'd never been to before and didn't really want to go. I was actually kind of, I said at one point, I don't think I'm even going to go, like, as a protest, but I'm glad I went, because it's venerated. Like, the grave itself said, the Holy One, Goldstein, that he did what he gave his life, it says, for the people of Israel, its Torah and its land. And it was just unimaginable to be there and to see that it's like this white stones, and stones have been put on it. So I think that in some ways, the Book of Esther just amplifies some of the questions that we're all asking, of like the fear when we know there is someone out to get us, and there is, you know, like the rise of anti-Semitism, Hamas, who are a terrorist organization with very clear aims about what it is, you know, to be Jewish in this world. And the other questions we're asking, you know, and having conversations about Netanyahu and his government. And I think we need to face those questions. I think actually, not only is it about joy and the ability and need to step into that, it's also about having some of these hard conversations. And I don't think we can maybe do what we all did 2 years ago and say, yeah, it's hard. You know, like we actually just need to be having them now, however terrifying it is. So I'm kind of ready for Purim this year in a way I don't think I was actually last year either.
For me, there's that. It also adds an interesting individual question. I think it's really easy to look at our festivals from a kind of communal aspect and say, this is what we communally were going through in our past, and this is what we communally are going through in our present. But there's something around the role of Esther and the challenge that Mordechai gives her that says, you know, you don't have a choice here. You don't get to decide whether you act or don't act in terms of having to take a stance on the fact that Haman is out to kill us all. Perhaps you have been placed in this palace, in this moment, you know, for such a time as this, you know, that this is why you're here, because this is your moment. And it's an interesting kind of call to action, I think, for all of us, that what does a time like this mean that any of our role is? And I don't just mean people kind of in a leadership position or people that kind of feel like they've got kind of authority. You know, for me, there's something about being able to say, who am I as a Jew in the diaspora right now? Who am I as somebody who, you know, watches the news every day, obsessively, I would say, but has a visceral response to what I'm hearing, both in the content of the news and in how it's presented back to me. And all of those things, you know, I ask myself, so what do I do with this? What's my role? Do I just sit here and hope for the best? Or do I have a role to play? And I think that, you know, we can put on our masks and pretend to be another on Purim, but actually, I think it leaves us with the discomfort long after the festival, which is, what's your role at a time like this?
Yeah, amen to that. That's a powerful message, isn't it? Really, because it's so easy to feel powerless in this time. And so for Purim to invite us, I guess it's a conversation I was having with some colleagues this week, like it's an invitation into agency rather than victimhood. It's about working together in community rather than kind of believing that we're by ourselves and isolated, because that's, I think, the most dangerous place to be in. Yeah, thank you. It's very powerful. This is why I love our conversations, you see. I'm going to come into Purim with a different perspective.
And I'm really looking forward to the rest of this series, because actually I think that, you know, we've touched on some of the topics that we're going to be looking at. But actually for me, there's something about, you know, how do I unpack the guilt of my 18 years of rabbinic leadership, which I feel has left my community where it is right now? And am I to blame? How do I be part of moving that forward? And just the ripples of everything that is slightly different now in 2025 than it was when we last had this chat in 2023. And please God, in 2027, when we're recording, I do not want our future selves to be thinking, oh, we didn't know how easy it was then. God forbid. God forbid. It should ever get harder than this. This is as hard as it gets.
From your mouth to God's ears.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So I think we're starting to wrap up this first in our series 4 of Rabbiting On. And it's so lovely to know that this conversation has kicked us off in lots of different directions that I hope that we'll be continuing over the next number of episodes.
But before we finish, I should say that I have been appointed as the head of communications for Rabbiting On podcast.
Mazel tov, Robin.
Thank you so much. My appointment. I will add it to my little introduction of myself now in future spaces. So we've got a new Instagram account. So do follow us behind the scenes and extra special updates. Our tag... I don't think I should be head of communication.
Handle, I think it's called.
Handle.
I'm so young and trendy. Aww. I think it's called Handle.
I feel like I'm not going to be in this role for long. Okay, our handle is at...
Shout out to Susie Phillip, who's learned everything there is to know about social media so she can help with the Wellspring social media. We love her for it.
Oh, great. Okay, well, maybe we might need to snaffle someone to come and help. I'm sure we can manage. So our handle is rabbiting_on_podcast. Rabbiting On Podcast. And you can email us also at rabbitingon@traceproductions.co.uk. And all of this will be included in the show notes for reference as well.
And we really, really hope that you do get in touch either by email or on Instagram. We love hearing from you guys and letting us know what you want us to talk about or adding your views and opinions into what we've already chewed over. It's your chance to get in on the conversation when we haven't let you get a word in edgeways. We're kind of also hoping that there may be some additional episodes that will come into the horizon later on this year, but we're going to have to keep you posted on that one.
It's really a funding issue. So as long as the funding keeps coming in, we'll keep making the podcast. But that leaves me to say a huge thank you to Shoresh Charitable Trust, who are funding our ability to be able to put this first half of the series together, and for the support of Progressive Judaism for helping us bring this new series to life. So join us again in 2 weeks' time, where we'll be catching up and thinking through really what it means to be Jewish today, although I haven't stolen that phrase from my dad's book title.
Shout out to Being Jewish Today.
It's an homage.
Yeah. We should at least Absolutely. Plug the book. If we're going to steal it, we should plug the book. It's very good.
There you go. So I'm looking forward to inviting you to join us in these conversations. We love having them and really love hearing your feedback and feeling your presence as part of the conversations as well. So thank you to everybody who's been listening, and a big thank you, and lovely to be back with you, to Robin and Debbie.
So lovely. Hey. See you in a couple of weeks.
See you soon.
Bye.
A little bit of this, a little bit of that, rabbit.